what would National Hunt Racing be without a little choice? Jockey or trainer? Bay or grey? Form or silks? And now, Paddy Power's new money-back tokens give you even more choice because you choose the race to apply your token to. Get money back as a free bet if your horse finishes in the designated places on a race of your choosing. Just look out for our money-back token promos and claim your token however you like. Paddy Power. Applies to races with 8 or more runners. Opt-in required. Max free bet £10. T's and C's apply. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org.
Welcome along to the From the Horse's Mouth weekend tipping show. Looking ahead to a lovely mixture of jumps and flat racing, Scottish Grand National at Ayr, and a very good card, a premier race day, no less, at Newbury. We may even look at the Curragh as well as other content, but it's Rory De Largy, partner in crime, as per usual. You're here, you're well, and you are in?
I'm in Hampshire.
Ooh, that's less exciting.
Yeah, well, I try to find myself somewhere exotic to go to for one of these, but
it's home
for a while, as I said last time.
That's harsh on Exeter. I would have thought that is a pretty exotic Exeter. Is that not what it says on the sign?
No. Exeter was exotic. Yeah. Okay,
welcome to exotic Exeter. Rory, well done last week at Aintree. You boldly suggested that Sainsbury, who we may get to later, would go off or should be favoured for the handicap chase over 2 miles. He was 14-1 at the time recording.
Not just any handicap chase over 2 miles, of course, the red rum.
Yeah, but I'm not giving it that chance. I refuse to sully his name. He should be given a proper race, not the red rum, over 2 miles over fences and handicappers. But your co-host before, or your co-colleague, presenter, whatever you're called, co-guest, before we start recording, reminded me he didn't go off favour, PK, despite Rory putting him up saying he'd go off favour. He went off 5-1 instead of the 14s. Frank Hickey, how are you?
I'm all right, yeah. I just want to bring everyone back down to earth a small bit.
Okay, a small bit.
That was
right,
a great shout, though, to be fair.
It was. And it was
never a moment's worry, really, was there?
Almost as good a shout as his other shout later in the week. El Jefe, yes. 80-1 at the time of recording, if I'm right in saying, I thought we were close to 80s. Maybe we were 66 or 40s.
There was 66 is around. Yeah.
So, massive price. It was a massive price.
It's nice when they work out, especially Sainsbury made pretty much all the running, and El Jefe's come from miles off the pace. He could have got whatever you liked in running. The commentator basically suggesting he's about to be pulled up any second. He's struggling in the back of the field, but actually he wasn't. It was great to watch. I thought it was a wonderful ride from a very inexperienced jockey who I mentioned on the pod, Ben Smith. He just didn't panic at all, didn't ask the horse for an effort until late in the day, knew how the race would pan out, knew his horse had the stamina, and there's a chance they would go hard and stop, and that's exactly what happened. They did stop in front. And if he tried to keep in touch with them, he wouldn't have won. And by just letting the horse do his own thing, he's got the lot in the end, and I've got a lot to thank him for, because I think most jockeys wouldn't have won that. So for a guy who has been a £10 claimer until that win, that was a remarkable show of confidence.
Yeah. Well, if you read the race and post comments for anyone who missed the race and didn't see it with their own eyes, towards rear, dropped to last with one circuit to go, tailed off after four out. That's actually written. It says tailed off after four out, headway after two out, 8 lengths down at the last, and comes to win under young Ben Smith, who had a great interview and went viral as well on social media. To be fair to yourself and Fran Berry nearly went through the card on the last Friday as well. So the From the Horses Mouth podcast producing a lot of winners. Frank Hickey, on your return, no pressure.
Oh yeah, I'm about to change all that.
Oozing with confidence. Yeah. I love it. Absolutely oozing.
Back to bring people back down to earth. That's me, yeah.
Well, great to have you. It is great to have you. But your wish will make up for any potential value losers, should they be provided. Right, before we get cracking on air and Newbury, I've actually no notes. Producer Mark is basically on holidays. I know he is actually on holidays next week, so he's basically on holidays now. He said, I've nothing for you, PK, which is great. But I would like to say, we'll be talking a lot about the championship, the Trainers' Championship, obviously Dan Skelton, Paul Nichols, and a certain Willie Mullins. Lots of runners for them at Ayr. Ruby will be back next week because it'll be a huge pod as we look ahead to the weekend with Sandown, including the UK jumps season, and no doubt Willie Mullins will plenty of runners there. So Ruby will be back next week. Frank out, Ruby in. Or maybe Rory. Nah, Frank's gotten quiet now. Right, lads, we talk about the Ayers ITV action. The 1:15 is the first race I want to look at. I didn't actually originally have this down in the running order because it wasn't originally due to be on ITV. But lo and behold, it's on ITV. And the horse who Rory DeLarge tipped up at 14-1 is 2-1 favourite at the time of recording. At least I think he is. Yeah, Sonsbury, Pembroke for Dan Skelton and Harry 4-1. So Paul Nichols and Skelton at the top of the market. But as you're going to see all day long on Saturday, Willie Mullins is thrown in. Well, if the B team are running at Aintree, maybe the C team are gone to air. He's still likely to have winners. So Uncle Phil at 4-1, 5-1, and bigger the remainder. Rory, your thoughts?
I think Sambui is likely to follow up. Bottom price in the market with Paddy Power the motor 2-1. And that's about the price I'd put him in at. I'd want a little bit bigger to get involved, but I think you will get bigger than that because I think there'll be money for Uncle Phil. Because he's representing Willie. I think Pembroke is a horse who's probably been laid out for this as well. So that he's liable to try support. And I do respect his chances. So I think you'll get a little bit of a drift from 2-1 because he's up £10 for that win at the entry and it's his third quick run. So there are reasons why you might see him getting beaten on the basis that, you know, he was off quite a short layoff when he won at the entry and he's turned out, you know, 9 days later again. So that is a possibility. I think that those things get factored into price. So 2-1 is short enough in the grand scheme of things, but I thought his mark was wrong. You know, they just had to find his niche. He was tried over further, over hurdles. And as I said, he had form and he ran the French champion hurdle last year over 3-1. But the way he shaped at Chepstow in the style of a horse who would prove best at a sharpish 2 miles. He gets it again here, very similar sort of test there to it is at the entry. And I don't think a £10 rise stops him. I mean, he just watched the race, the Red Rum again. You know, he had that one everywhere, really. Sam was has won one of his better races over fences last week as well. But Sam, we just had a stone in hand, essentially. So up £10 makes it a wee bit tougher, but I think he'll follow up again.
Okay, back-to-back wins at back-to-back festivals for Sambui. Frank, I don't think you went in this race because I didn't actually have it on the running order unless you come out of the woodwork.
It's trappy enough in that. And my one worry for Sambui would be that Treprey-in-Law, Uncle Phil also like to kick on and Pembroke can be ridden handy as well. So there could be a bit of pace on here. I wouldn't be mad to have a bet if I was. I'd probably take a chance on Tommy Zasker, even though he's been disappointing in the main this season. I just thought the way the race was run might suit him. But yeah, it's very trappy.
Yep, that's fine. We'll see how it goes. It's the opening race on Ayers card on ITV. Sambui bidding to give Paul Nichols a few quid back in that trainer's title race. On to the 1:50. This is the Novices Champion Handicap Chase, if there can be such a thing. Montgomery. For Vinicius Williams and Charlie Deutsch on a great winning run, 4-1 favourite. Oh, by the way, I should say we're recording just past half 12 on Thursday. So we're essentially looking at the very first prices since the declarations. 6-1 Deeper Blue for Harry Fry, who had a lovely winner early in the week at Cheltenham with In Excelsis Deo. 7-1 Mufasa for Paul Nichols and Harry Cobden. Then Willie Mullins, of course, he's sending horses that you wouldn't expect him to. Sharjah will top the weights and is 7-1 Paul Townend booked. It's 8-1 and bigger the rest. All right, Frank, give us a winner.
Yeah, I'm fancying Deeper Blue here. My angle really is mainly based on the Harry Fry stable form. If you look at this whole season, he's only had 23 winners this season. Like, the strike rate's still okay at 17%. But for a yard like him, you'd probably expect a bit better. And you look at it by month then, like September, he was 2 from 8, October, 1 from 11. He had a decent November when he was 7 from 30, December, 2 from 24, January, 2 from 13, February, 2 from 11, March, 1 from 16. And then in April, he's 4 from 7. So it just feels like something's clicked or they've got to the root of maybe some issue or something. And you saw you had 2 winners at Cheltenham then as well on Wednesday. In a Chelsea Day, as you said, and Highmark both won. This Deeper Blue, he's only had an overall strike rate of 2 from 13, but he's had 5 second place finishes also. Like 2 years ago, he made his handicap debut over hurdles. He bolted up off a mark of 124, beat the likes of Stormy Flight, Grandeur Dam and Sonagino. He disappointed on his next start later that autumn, but he was off for a year after it, so obviously something happened. And he returned in October for his chase debut, plumped over just shy of 2.5 miles. He was beaten a length, shaping like he wanted a bit more of a test of stamina. He was poor at Doncaster's next start, kind of coincided a little bit with the stable gone a bit quieter. his second at Hereford at the end of January, when he was beaten less than two lengths by Henry's Friend over 2 mile five. It was a much better run, and that Henry's Friend then went and won the Grade Two runs to Townascot's next start. And then last minute, Newbury stepped up to just shy of 3 miles. He ran on well to be second, beaten just over length. But to be fair, the winner wasn't all out either. I thought it was a much better run. He got 3 pounds. He's completely unexposed at staying trips. I think any drawing out of the ground wouldn't inconvenience him. And with, I said, with it looking like the Harry Fry stables just hitting into a bit of red hot form, I'll side with Deeper Blue.
Deeper Blue for Frank Kickey. Rory DeLargy.
Yeah, I respect Deeper Blue's chances. He wears cheap pieces for the first time, as does my selection. I thought Donny Boy at 20-1 was overpriced here. Gets in on bottom weight at 10-4. He's no champion, but this isn't really a crowning of champions race at all. And he's been running pretty well this season. He was very promising early in his career and seemed to sort of lose the plot a bit last season. But he's been back in good heart, having had wind surgery last year, being in the frame on 4 starts this season, including over this trip at Weatherby last time out. When, in fairness, he was being a fair way, but it was still a respectable performance. To finish third to top of the bill last time out. He's been dropped £2 for that. He gets Bruce Lynn on board claiming three as well, so he's effectively £5 lower. And look, the cheek pieces make a bit of a difference to him. I think he's a player for places, at least here. It's a competitive race, but I thought he deserves to be a few points shorter than 20-1. I wouldn't have ruled him out at around 11 or 12-1. So at that price, I'm keen to have an each-way play on Donny Boy.
We're nearly going to get a Rory's rant there about the race title. I mean, I'd be all with you. I don't think you should be allowed to put champion in the title for races like this. But anyway, we talk too much about race titles. I hope producer Mark has put this show on YouTube, by the way, folks, because in between Rory's selections, we're getting a great angle of Frank Hickey finishing his lunch. What is the lunch there, Frank?
It was a little bit, took me a lot longer to go through these races. Damn flat trying to do it. Just basically a couple of slices of toast and a cup of tea to keep me tied over.
That's very big.
I'll have something proper later, but yeah.
Good offering in the canteen today. The nachos are excellent.
I'm at home, so.
Get yourself into the office.
You mustn't eat them too quickly, though. Swift.
You mustn't eat the nachos too quickly?
No, you got to take your time with your nachos, don't you?
Well, oh yes, this is in reference to me. I wolfed them in before the show was finished, but I will start coughing soon. All right, so selections for the so-called Novice Champion Handicap Chase are Deeper Blue and Donny Boy, a horse beginning with D, and with two names will win the race, one of those two. Right, the 225 is next. It is the Champion Hurdle, the Scottish Champion Hurdle, that is. A handicap hurdle, a limited handicap, low to sud for the Skeltons, the 3-1 favourite. Favour and Fortune for Alan King. Seems to be quite strong. It's now 5-1. Bialystock. For one of few for Willie Mullins, and one assumes Paul Tenno will ride that one. I'll just get the updated jockey bookings. Is your shortest price of the Mullins horse, 11-2. Rubode for Cobden Nichols, 10s. Westport Cove for Mullins. He's also got Alvany in the race at 14-1. I go back to you, Toast and Tea. What do you got for the Scottish Champion Hurdle?
I'd be quite keen on this now. Bialystock, Town and Rides. Look, Lodisood's a huge danger off 138. He's been second in the Bedford Hurdle off 129. And second in the county hurdle off 135. And to be fair, he looked all over the winner of the county. We know how good Skelton is, like with these handicappers as well. But Bialystock, for me, is just crying out for a strongly run 2 miles on a sharpish track on not too bad ground. And he's going to get that, I think, really for the first time since Punchestown last year. If you look at his profile, he was decent on the flat in France. He had 3 wins and 5 seconds from 9 starts there. It did take him 3 starts to get off the mark over hurdles, but that's when he got a bit better ground at Nace and he beat the very useful the company sergeant. He went to the Punchestown Festival last year and yielded into soft ground and he won the big 2 mile handicap hurdle there off the mark of 130 and he tanked through the race. He was practically still in the bridle jump in the last and picked up well to win well from Tax for Max. And I think there was another winning one back in third that day. It looked a decent handicap hurdle and I thought he valued for probably even a bit further than what he won by. He did only run kind of seventh, I think, in the Galway Hurdle, beating 6 lengths and disappointed in 2 small field novice races. But he was only beaten 3 lengths in the Grade One Royal Bond, albeit it was a substandard renewal. And then he went to the DRF when he was still travelling well in behind when he was brought down by the fall of Attaboy Charlie. And I think the county hurdle, 2 miles won on a stiffer track, on heavy ground, would have been all wrong for him. And I think this is tailor-made for him. I'd be very keen on him. The only thing is, when the price went up first, he was as big as 12 to 1 just an hour ago. And elsewhere, now he's not anywhere near that because he's a choice of talent, but I'd still be very keen on him.
Well, you were, let's be Bialystok for Frank. And Rory, you were quite keen, I think, for very similar reasons on Bialystok at the festival, but he just never got into it.
Yeah, well, I mean, Frank's right there, and Ruby made the same point when I mentioned Bialystok for the county. I thought he was just an interesting horse, given that he went under the radar at the DRF. He was moving stealthily into contention around the inside when he was brought down at the second last at Leopardstown. And I thought he was a horse to bear in mind, but the county was probably not the right race for him, given the emphasis on stamina up the hill, even though it wasn't an end-to-end gallop that day. But yeah, Frank's dead right. This is exactly what he wants. The downside is that he's just become well-found in the market. You know, he's Lotus Suit is 3 to 1. He's only £3 higher when just touched off by a horse he was absolutely thrown in that race and absurd. Whereas Bialystok hasn't. He's racing off the same mark as when finishing well beaten that day. So at first glance, you say, well, why would you price Lotus Suit and Bialystok up? You wouldn't have them that close in the market based on A, how they shaped that day and B, how they're weighted here. So my initial thought was Bialystok will go under the radar here and you'll get a double figure price about him. But as Frank says, you know, there was a bit of 12 to 1 available, but it didn't last very long. The question is, what kind of price you're going to get now? And I think he's a bit of a wise guy horse now, in that the wise guys being me and Frank at this stage, but people may catch on to him. And if he ends up going off at 5 to 1 or thereabouts, the question you've got to ask yourself is how much value you're getting. You find the angle. The angle is absolutely spot on. This is what he wants. But you would have expected in normal circumstances to be getting 12 to 1 or 14 to 1 about a horse with his profile. And you're stuck at the moment with 11 to 2. So that's a little, sticks in the craw a little bit, but the point is valid. And I think, for me, it's just a case of what kind of price you get on the day and how big you get involved. At the moment, I'd be getting involved to very small stakes at 11 to 2 because, you know, the game has been discovered, as it were. But if you do get 8 or 9 to 1, then he's worth a bigger bet than that. If he was nearly the same price as Lotus Suit, you're cutting off your nose to spite your face, having that bet, you know, because yes, he did shape a lot better than the result, but Lotus Suit is such an obvious one in here. He was clearly laid out for the county hurdle. He looked ahead of his mark there. He looked ahead of his mark in Newbury, and he's still ahead of his mark. So you don't want to be getting a situation where you're avoiding Lotus Suit and you're getting the same price about him as Bialystok. At the moment, I could take the top price in the market about Bialystok, but I wouldn't want to go any shorter than that.
What's the top price in the market? We're allowed to say that, right?
Top price in the market is 13 to 2. Okay. That's a general price.
It was double figures everywhere when I was.
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, it's one of those. You want to get on as quickly as you can with a horse like this, and the market does tend to correct itself very quickly. The question is whether it's sort of, you know, closer to the off, you get a sort of a general correction of that, or whether everyone sort of jumps on the same bandwagon. Yeah. And I think he does kind of look like a bandwagon horse now.
That can happen as well, because we often record on the Thursday, which is, as I said earlier, is basically the first show of prices. But Frank, to be fair, just to those outside who aren't aware of the trading, what will happen on Friday will be this race will be repriced. You guys will have a second look at basically at the market, because this is kind of based on the anti-post market, but then you get a little bit more confident with your trading and you'll have a little bit more time to look at it. So you guys, there's a chance you can push something out or put something in. So that does happen. You essentially reprice the races on the Thursday into Friday or the other way around?
Friday into Saturday. Yeah, I think in this case, I think it was probably put back, like the field held up, so it was probably put back up of what the anti-post price was when he was not a certain runner, and he was floating around 10, 12 to 1 all week. And obviously people have gone, that's far too big. And then as soon as Townend was confirmed, because they have Westbrook Cove
Albany.
Yeah, so yeah, he's just, you know... he's starting up dramatically very quickly. Like, look, you can make a case for Fewan here, don't get me wrong. Like, Rory's point is right. Like, there is a price where you go, right, enough's enough. Like Lotus, so it's very, very obvious. First Street for Nicky Henderson's come down to a mark where he can be competitive as well, 143. You know, even look, if the ground continues to dry out, Salsada, I think she was third last year in the race, maybe. And even Florida Dreams, you can make a case for, like, he's won the Aintree Bumper last year, and yeah, probably been a bit disappointing in the main over hurdles, but you know, at the same time, he hasn't got you know, he's off 126, so that mark's probably workable. But yeah, look, I wouldn't be surprised if you're still able to get, you know, 7-1 maybe be out of stock at some stage Saturday morning. And yeah, at that sort of price, you definitely
that'll do
worth something. Okay. But it, Rory's right. Like, if you're talking about him getting towards the same price as Lotus Suit, you'd probably be siding with Lotus Suit, definitely.
Right. Well, Bialystok, very much a price. We'll keep an eye on the price. Obviously, if you see him drifting out to a price you're happy with and the lads happy with, fire ahead. That's in the champion, the Scottish Champion Hurdle, draw for 225. On to the Jordan Electric Seafield Trophy, Mayor's Handicap Hurdle. And this race is headed in the market by Willie Mullins and Paul Townend. They've got the 3-1 favourite. Similar situation here. There was 10s available. Townend gets booked into 3-1. That's a penny 100. One of three for Willie. He's got also C'est La Vie, who's drifted, and Pink in the Park, who's also drifted, with Townend choosing a penny 100. Coco Mademoiselle for the Skeletons is 4-1. 5-1, as I mentioned, C'est La Vie. Paul Nix has got Larchmont Lass at 11-2. And the Fleur of Scotland is there at 14-1, be an apt winner in those green silks. And what I mean by green is, Rory, the name of the owner is green as well as they are green, isn't it?
It's absolutely Raymond Anderson Green. Scotland's leading owner over the last 25 years, I suppose. He's been he's had horses maybe even longer than that. So yeah, a massive supporter of Scottish racing.
Who wins the race?
The one I like in here is Coco Mademoiselle for Dan Skelton. Obviously, Mr. Skelton would very much like to thwart Mr. Mullins in a race like this. And I thought she maybe was favourite for this in the anti-post betting, such as it was. There wasn't an awful lot of it. And I thought she was well enough treated. She was disappointing on paper on her handicap debut when pulling up at Ascot, but she shaped really well that day for a long way. And I think she probably swallowed her tongue or had a breathing problem, whatever. She travelled well. She looked likely to play a big part in the finish, and then she stopped quickly off the home turn. But she turned out at Chepstow a month later. And although it was in, you know, she was 4-9 favourite for a novice hurdle, I thought she won in good style. And the mare that she beat that day and beat pretty easily was placed in a handicap hurdle off a mark of 107 at the weekend. So I thought the form was, you know, for all it was, it looked like a fairly straightforward task, but the form was perfectly okay. She's I suppose you could question whether she stays the trip given how she shaped at Ascot, and she was dropping back at Chepstow last time out. But I thought, you know, she looks like she should stay, and I'm inclined to just go with the idea that something went a bit amiss with her at Ascot. The fact that they're persevering at 3 miles suggests that they think they found why she didn't last home that day, and it wasn't stamina related. And obviously air over 3 miles is a lot less taxing stamina wise than Ascot is anyway. So I thought Coco Mademoiselle was perfectly well handicapped at a mark of 121. I thought she had every chance. The only other point I'd make in this is, if there was any Willie Mullins horse in this race who might have been running here anyway, it would be C'est La Vie, who is owned by Lynn and Angus McLennan, who obviously love to have winners in Scotland. That, as you may guess from the name, they are Scottish.
Oh, it's like, there's no way they're Scottish.
Yes. So it's very possible that C'est La Vie was going to come here anyway. And I wouldn't read an awful lot into the fact that she's not necessarily the choice of Paul Townend. So I thought C'est La Vie was actually the most interesting of the Mullins runners in the race. And you might end up getting a better price about her as a result.
Can happen. He's done well this season, Paul Townend, or whether he's picking them or Willie, and they have a conversation. But he's done quite well in terms of getting it right in the main. Frank, your thoughts?
Yeah, Lynn McLennan sounds like a character from Braveheart, doesn't it, really?
Angus definitely.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Wasn't he the right-hand man to Braveheart? Wasn't he to...
Anyway, Brendan Gleeson plays his mate in the film anyway.
Yeah. Anyway, to get back to... look, I kind of agree with Rory and Coco Mademoiselle. I think 1-2-1 is very workable. Obviously, you know, you have to forgive her the Ascot run, but, you know, she stopped very quickly and they obviously feel like they've got to the root of that issue. She should stay. She won a point beating El Elefante, who's think she's rated about 125 for Lucinda Russell now. And, you know, you knock out that Ascot run, and she's pretty progressive overall, like beaten by Springtime Promise, two lengths at Huntingdon. That one obviously went and won a grade two, I think, at Sandown. She did a very easy Chepstow the last day. You know, there was a small question mark about the trip, but you know, I think she'll get it. And yeah, a mark of 121 is workable. You see what Dan's able to do with these mares as well. Like, you look at West Balboa is a prime example of how much he can improve them. And she'd be the most likely winner for me. I didn't have the price when I was going through it. I wouldn't discount Atazini for Stuart Crawford either. Just touched off in a Doncaster listed race over 3 miles. She's staying no problem. The winner of that race, Pino Rouge, wasn't disgraced in the Sefton at Aintree last week. She was fourth, albeit beaten 18 lengths. But yeah, just looking at the prices there, Atazini's put in 14 to 1. You know, it's fair enough price for one that'll go and run a race and she'll stay. I wouldn't put anyone off her either, but you know, Willie Street, it's hard to know. A penny 100. She ran well in the grade one the last day, staying on, albeit beaten 20 lengths, but she was well beaten in Limerick before that. Yeah, she wouldn't look thrown in off 133 to me. But yeah, it'd be Coco Madam as well for Dan Skelton.
All right, double nod for Coco Mademoiselle. We'll get to Braveheart names later on, but I don't think Angus was in it, but we might get a Braveheart horse in later on at Newbury. You might know the one I'm thinking of. On to the feature, the Scottish Grand National, 335, 4 miles round there. And if we're talking about Wise Guy horses, maybe Gitmaker is that Wise Guy horse. Second to I Know the Way You're Thinking, obviously at the festival. Price is disappearing, 13 to 2 favourite just though. There's not much between the top five of them in the betting. McDermott for Willie Mullins being sent over, 7 to 1. Mr. Incredible, who I don't know if he's always carried the Justin Carthy colours, but he definitely will on Saturday, according to the Racing Post anyway. 7 to 1. Angler's Crag winning 4 in a row for Brian Nelson, 8 to 1. Spanish Harlem, another one for Mullins at 8 to 1, and then 12s and bigger the rest. Okay, Frank, I don't know what your record's like in this particular race. It's kind of a similar vibe, I feel, to the Irish National. Novices can do well. There's a couple of novices in the race, but what's your angle?
Yeah, I'm trying to look at my recent record. I'd say, geez, I might be going back to Gosby George since the last time, back to winner of it maybe. Looking at it there. Gitmaker's obvious enough. He did have a hard race in the Kimur, and you know, it's dangerous enough to go as well that he's 8 lengths behind a grade one winner, a Southern grade one winner, he's only a pound higher. You know, he's obvious, but his price reflects that. Like, at the same time, I wouldn't be madly in love with a few Willies now. Like McDermott did well at Fairy House. Probably wasn't a very strong race. He's a whack, like he's 16 pounds higher, albeit allowing as well for the American UK. I wouldn't be gone here. Mr. Incredible, I was liking for the National, unfortunately, jumped into the back of a faller last week and unseated. He wouldn't want the ground to dry out too much, I wouldn't have thought. Stay away, Faye. This is what he wants, like a real stamina test. It's just, can he give all that weight away? I'd be inclined to say no. But yeah, this is the sort of thing he wants. I think if I were them, I wouldn't be overly concerned about the Gold Cup next year and just maybe getting dropped a few pounds for a Grand National. And the one I liked looking at it and was Inish Ore for Lucinda Russell. You go back a couple of years ago, they had Mighty Thunder bolt up in that Edinburgh National. He won by 20 lengths off a mark of, get it here, he won that off 129 by 20 lengths. He was then second in the Midlands National and off 139 and won the Scottish National off a mark of 144. Now, Nishoras looked transformed for the extreme trip and winning the Edinburgh National by 21 lengths off a mark of 119. Coming from a lower base, but he was very impressive. Made all, jumped well, travelled well. It was all over three out, like it was in just a demolition job. He missed the Midlands National due to heavy ground. Doesn't want that testing. Like, it's soft at the moment today. Small bit of rain there today and it's dry after that. It's sunny. Like, I'm looking at soft ground at worst. Like, you know, it might even be a small bit quicker. Yeah, he's going to carry 10 stone 3, which is no bad thing in these marathon trips. Yeah, I just thought he was fierce solid each way. About, I think we're still 14 to 1, aren't we?
12.
12, yeah. It's one I got involved in at the start of the week. I could just see him running a really big race. So
definitely in his ear, not in his shore.
In his ear?
Yeah, the UK comes in, Unless there's a Scottish Island or something.
No. It's called in Ashir first, but it wasn't certain.
Ah, yeah, it's definitely in Ashir. Sure, the English. The bastardized title, you know, I-N-I-S-H-E-E-R, would be how you'd spell it. But no, in Ashir, one of the Aran Islands. All right, Rory, what are you thinking?
I shall read this out from what I wrote in the Irish Field about 2 months ago. In Ashir won the Edinburgh National for Lucinda Russell and Derek Fox, the 7-year-old, improving for forcing tactics as much as the fitting of advisor, and looks an ideal sort for the Scottish National there. Handicapper raised him £14 for his 21-length route, but that merely ensures his place in the Premier long-distance handicap chases, and he looks one to keep on side as a result. So, there you go.
Hang on a second. Do we still need to pay you for that? Plagiarising your own work.
So, I have backed something else in the race, I have to say, and I'll mention that as well. But yeah, Inishir has been my one horse for this race for a fair while, and obviously you can see why Lucinda wanted to keep him aside after that that easy win at Musselburgh. The rise in the weights just guaranteed his place in this contest, and I'd be very keen on him. The other one I've had a couple of bob on at the top price is a horse I've been rude about before, but I've sort of come round to thinking that's Ballygriffin Cottage, who I thought looked like he was going to be a superstar when he beat Beauport at Haydock at the start of last season, and then completely lost his way, but has run better on his last couple of starts, particularly last time out. And I've just come to the conclusion that, you know, the Skeltons very much know what they're doing when they're getting a horse like this back on track. And the Ballygriffin Cottage, he's 25-1 in the place, I think he's 20s with Paddy's. I can see him being a bit of a mover in the market, so I've backed him, anticipating a bit of a plunge. He was a good second off 1.35 at Sandown last time out. And he just, you know, he's at least shown signs on his last two starts that he's refinding the form that he showed early last year. But that win over Beauport suggested he'd be a lot better than his current mark. And you actually, looking back at his form, you can now find excuses for a couple of moderate runs, and he looks like he's been lined up for a long distance handicap chase. I thought it might be the given he ran well at Sandown last time, I thought it might have been the Bet365 Gold Cup, but he's come here instead. He may still look to do both races. That wouldn't be a surprise given what's happening with the Trainers Championship. But he's interesting at a price as well. But Inishir is the number one pick in the race.
Double vote, lads. Well done. It's actually called the Old Whipbread. Rory, if you listen to any other racing podcast or show, it's the Old Whipbread, like the old Hennessy. It'd be funny if they just called it that, wouldn't it? They changed the race title. Okay, that's the jumps done. Happy days. We're on to the proper stuff now, folks. We're on to the flat on the turf. Frank's delighted.
Dangerous talk now.
Yeah, well, I'm bred for the flat, so yeah, it's all Frank, would you stop?
Who's the Grand National winner, in fairness?
Exactly. Yeah. So there you go. But some horses do end up quite slow. I ended up quite slow, being bred for the flat and not even quick enough for jumps either. Newbury is where we're going to go. It's the Premier race day on Saturday afternoon. It's live on ITV. The first race live on ITV will be, for many, known as the John Porter Stakes. It's the Dubai Duty Free Finest Surprise Stakes nowadays, Group 3. Now, I mentioned the Braveheart theme. We've got the Scottish National. Hamish runs here for William Haggis and Tom Markand, a horse who just does not know how to lose. And he's second favourite, 11-4. Arrest is the one to beat for the Gosdens and Kieran Schumark. Big year for Kieran Schumark. Al Karim, the horse who can't win with duck eggs next to his name. If you listen to last year's podcast, you know what I'm talking about there. Carl Burke trains, and he's had a good start to the season, Carl Burke. They dominate the betting, Frank, seeing as so you're so keen to talk about the flat turf action. Off you go, the Dubai Duty Free fight.
Tricky enough trying to figure out, you know, what stables are relatively forward, what ones are needing a run. Just at the prices, I'm going to chat chess piece. Look, he is a bit defined on ratings. Like, he's rated 109. Like, Arrest is rated 114. Muchtaba is rated 114. Hamish is rated 117 and has a £3 penalty. So, you know, on ratings, he's £5 defined. And he was 11 lengths behind Arrest when he was 6 in the ledger. I would say Arrest is definitely at his very best on soft testing ground at the moment. It's soft, good to soft places, and pretty dry forecast. See it maybe getting more good to soft by time the race on Saturday, hopefully. That might not be absolutely ideal for a rest. And a few of the gods and horses seem to be taking a run as well. And, you know, chess piece, he was fairly progressive last season. He won his only start in a maiden as a juvenile in November. On his third start, then he bolted up the competitive York handicap off 96. You know, he was third in the Queen's Vase. His only real disappointment was that Ledger run. He came back then, was he second to Middle Earth? Was it an Ascot in his final start? I just thought, the Crisford's had a few run well recently. He might just be one that's a little bit more forward than the others. And yeah, the double figure price is what was tempting me. Like, I just didn't think he had that much to find on pure ability and form. And, you know, well, a few of the others might have bigger fish to fry later on in the year. I'd take a chance on him. Very tentative, you know.
Chess piece in a tricky race, says Frank Kiki. Is it a tricky race for DeLargy?
It is, yeah. It's tricky for exactly the same reason as Frank points out, that you can't approach flat racing with massive confidence at this stage of the season, because various trainers are further or ahead of the game than they'd like to be. In April, season doesn't really start until, you could say, the guineas, if you like. So you're guessing a little bit. A couple of the big yards just seem to be slightly behind. William Haggis, John O'Thady, Galston still looking for a turf winner this season. That could all change in the next day or two, really. But you know that I'm a fan of Al Karim, and although he's giving away weight here, as is Hamish, I think he will. I think he'll hit the frame at least. Again, the key to him these days is he just needs a bit of give in the ground. He was disappointing. We tipped him up when he won at Chester last year on the back of a couple of poor runs in Saudi Arabia and Maidan on very quick ground, which he just doesn't want these days. His record on ground that's sort of good or softer through his career is first, second, first, fifth, first, first, second. And the fifth came in a group one. So at group two or lower level, he's never been out of the two. And he was very good after a break last season when winning that listed race at Chester. He was up against race fit rivals that day. Blue Stocking was an odds on favourite who had classic form. So we know he'll go well fresh. And we know the conditions are ideal for him. So I'm more than happy to go with him. He doesn't need it hock deep. He just needs to leave a print. And I think it will dry up a fair bit at Newbury between now and race time. The going stick reading, I think, is 3.9, which makes it sound like it's really soft. But Newbury does dry up very quickly. And it's breezy and bright at the moment in my neck of the woods, which isn't too far away. I checked with my mother-in-law, who popped over by the house this morning, who lives very close to Newbury, and confirmed that it's very much the same there. So I think, although it sounds like it's sort of soft heavy at the moment, I think it'll just be on the soft side of good at the weekend. But that's good enough for Al Karim, and I think he'll hit the frame. I'd be sticking him in each way multiples and stuff like that. It's not necessarily a race to be having the mortgage on. And obviously he's got a little bit to find with Hamish on the pick of his one. I don't think Hamish, despite going unbeaten through the season, I don't think Hamish was quite as good as he was. I think he was very, very well placed to win those races last season. And I'm not sure that at the age of eight, he's going to be running exactly to his mark this season. I think Al Karim might do a little bit better still this year, given what a late start he had to last season and how well he ran when he did get the chance. And obviously he just ran out of time. His last run was right at the end of the season, 3rd of November at Newmarket. He's a good to soft ground turf horse. He will have been got ready for this. So can't see him out of the frame is the bottom line. And you're getting an each way price about him, just about.
Just about. Two hugely bullish selections there for the John Porter. I jest. Hamish, of course, was played by Brendan Gleeson, Frank, and he was Braveheart's mate. There you go.
Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
Yeah. Good Scottish act from Brendan Gleeson. But in this year, we've had Brendan Gleeson, we've had Braveheart mentioned.
Here at Paddy Power, we want our gambling to be fun and encourage our customers to bet responsibly. That's why we offer a number of tools to help you stay in control, including the ability to set deposit limits, get reminders after a certain amount of time playing, and to take breaks. For more information, visit responsiblegaming.paddypower.com. 18+, begambleaware.org.
Let's go to the Fred Darling Stakes. This is the recognised trial for the 1,000 guineas at Newbury due off at 2:05, now known as the Dubai Duty Free Stakes. And, well, it's interesting you mentioned at the time of recording, William Haggis hasn't had a winner on turf. He's got the big favourite here in Relief Rally at 9-4, just about favourite from Regal Jubilee for the Gosdens, who also started the season somewhat quietly. I'm looking forward, lads, to your form take on Falgaria, a filly who seems to be very progressive in Italy. Then Star Music for Richard Hughes, who has started the season brilliantly, and that's been well backed now, 11-2. All right, Frank. Bulgaria, a winner at San Siro and Capanelli. Will she win the Fred Darling?
Yeah, it's very tricky not knowing how forward they all are. I would be against Relief Rally. I think 7 furlongs would be a concern for me. By Kodiak, Dam's Progeny are all speed. I'd be against her. El Malka certainly bred for it. She's by Kingman out of the group, one running Narain, and she's half sister to Ben Battle. She won well at Southall on her debut. My worry is looking at Roger Varian's runners at Newmarket. They were tending to need a run. You know, Trusine ran okay in the Nell Gwyn, but definitely shaped like she'd improve for it. I'd probably leave her off. Regal Jubilee, very impressive on her third start with Bolty up in the Newmarket listed race on heavy ground. She's by Frankel out of Regal Realm, who's a dual Group 3 winner. She's a half to Regal Reality. Again, as Rory mentioned, the Gosdens runners appear to be needing a run. You're not, you know, the Richard Hughes horse was third behind Dan Sequence, a new market on her last start. You could definitely give her a chance. I just came back to Falgaria and I'd be willing to give her a chance. Look, your worry would be Marco Botti said 19 runners in the last 2 weeks, none of them have won. But at this Falgaria, she's 5-5 in Italy. She won a Group 3 and a Group 2 impressively. She's won heavy ground, good ground from 6 furlongs to a mile. In her Group 2 win, she easily beat 3 Havanas over 2 lengths. That 3 Havanas went to San Clu in her next start, and she was beaten less than 5 lengths by the well-regarded Zoom Zoom of Rafe Beckett, who runs in the green in the next race. And she's and he's very sharp price favourite. So taking a chance on how forward she'd be, I just thought 5-1. I'd take a chance. I said she's ground versatile. She'll stay further than 7 furlongs. And on a line through 3 Havanas, she might be half useful.
No lazy punditry here. Everyone would often go, sure, the Italian horse could be anything, or the ex-Italian horse here, but you dug into the form.
Oh, we're going to get started on lazy punditry, are we?
We shall swiftly move on.
Is there anything running in green and gold at Newbury, no?
Here we go. This is the part that Mark Walsh just puts hand in hands and he goes, oh God, they're going to say something. The mics are live, lads. The mics are live. Right. Falgaria, the selection for Frank. Have you been racing in San Siro, Frank?
I haven't, no. The closest I probably ever came was myself and Jill went to Rome for a long weekend. And the same weekend, we saw Tony Martin and Colin Keane in the airport in Rome when they had their first Group 1 winner.
It began with an L.
It began with an L, yeah.
Anyway, you think of that horse, but San Siro racetrack, it's... And when you say a stone's throw from the football stadium, it is quite literally a stone's throw. And it is stunning as a racetrack. It is really, really, if you're ever in the area, try and get there. We randomly were traveling through Milan and there was a race meeting on. I said, right, let's go. It was good crack. There's an amateur riding race in the first race. And I'd say these lads were big. They were big. Laganor from producer Mark. Yeah, the new Manners notes. Yes, well done. Well done. Very good, Laganor. I'm sure that just came to producer Mark, just like your own seance there provides you with those horses, Frank. You're struggling
In the Newton Manor stud colours.
Very good. Very good. So it's going to be an ex-Italian, kind of current Italian, Marco Botti trained winner, Falgaria for Frank, at least on a value side of things. What do you think of Rory?
I actually thought very much the same as Frank. I went through Falgaria's form as well, and it's not easy to be absolutely certain about it, but she's won sort of black type races by big margins. And as I said, the only real form line you can dig into is her beating the 3 Havanas and how that ran next time. It's worth pointing out that the fourth and fifth that day went on to win Next time out, Mysterious Shadow, who was fifth, won a listed race. But of course, most of the form lines have worked out pretty well. The problem with them is generally that they're working out in Italy. So there is the possibility that all the Italian form is a little bit suspect. But to be honest, it looks solid enough. And it's not impossible to be able to come up with ratings for Italian and German and French racing. It's not, it's not like, well, it's a different country, so it's impossible to find out how good this is. The same methods work. And she does look to have a decent chance on paper. She'll probably do better this season as well, I would hope, and she will be ready to go early. So I thought she was the pick as well. And I, again, the one who's rated higher than her on the time form figures is Relief Rally. I think she'll finish last. And listen, if you only had to listen to William Haggis talk about her last year, he basically said she's got no chance of training on. This filly will not train on. So we're having fun with her while we can and looking for every opportunity last season. She's not going to stay this trip. She's probably not. I imagine she won't have grown an inch over the winter either. I think Relief Rally is just the type of filly to finish out the back in a couple of runs at three and then get shuffled off to make babies. She strikes me as a very unlikely type to train on, particularly from two to three. And I wouldn't be interested in her here. There are obviously potential improvers in the shape of El Malka and Topanga, who've got plenty to find on paper, but are very lightly raced and liable to take a step up. And I wouldn't be surprised to see either of those win. But on paper, Bulgaria looks the most solid selection.
I think it's Relief Rally sold the first horse ever not to have strengthened up over the winter.
Really
much stronger than last year. Really improved.
Really
occasionally they don't grow and they still go on. I remember a long, long time ago, I'm sure Frank will remember this. He's not quite as old as me, but Ian Balding had a filly called Forest Flower, who's one of the smallest fillies I've ever seen. And she had a great battle several times as a two-year-old with a filly called Minstrella, who was big. The pair of them went head-to-head and Forest Flower just came out best in their meetings. Then Forest Flower was stuffed in her reappearance at three, but she went on to win the Irish Guineas. So, you know, they can surprise you, but I would be surprised if a Relief Rally is another Forest Flower.
See if we can get a price, Frank. You're mad for the special. Let's get a price from Relief Rally to finish last there. Put that up as the From the Horses Mouth special. But Bulgaria to win the race. And producer Mark is busy listening to us, lads, today. Sometimes he falls asleep during the pods, but he's listening away. He said he hasn't heard this much chat about Italian form in a weekend preview since Gazzetta Football Italia, the old the pink newspaper, the Gazzetta and Gazzetta dello Sport and the little espresso. James Richardson, isn't it? And he was sitting down there in his white suit. And
everyone gets exactly the same mental picture there, don't they?
Yeah, there is. Yeah. I mean, Colosseum in the background or something absolutely. Along those lines.
Little espresso.
Yeah, little espresso, and then just general chat about Gaza. Paul Gascoigne might be back this weekend. Might not. Let's see. So a lot of Italian form, didn't expect that. We'll go on to the Greenham. This is the Guineas trial. I was going to say made famous, but most notable winner, I suppose, Frankel. Zoom Zoom, he's the favourite. We've already had him referenced on the podcast, Rafe Beckett, and if he wins, he's 5-4. If Bulgaria wins, be interesting to see what kind of price Zoom Zoom goes off. 11-2 Army Ethos for Archie Watson, Holly Doyle. The Wathman Racing Team, which is the Qatari racing team owned by another rich Qatari fella. James Doyle is the stable jockey, or retained jockey, should say, to that owner now. He picks, or has picked, Ballymount Boy over Mr. Sketch, but there's not much between those two in the market. 6 and 8 to 1 and 9's bar. Okay, Rory DeLarghi, who wins the Greenham and will that horse win the 2000 Guineas? I'll go no.
Was that the Emir of Qatar you were referring
to? Yeah, your man.
Qatari fella,
some Qatari fella.
The boss.
Is he?
There
goes my job at Qatar Racing Club anyway. All right, okay.
It's not a great price, but I'm very keen on Zoom Zoom here. I suppose what you could do is just do the double Bulgaria and Zoom Zoom on that side. Slightly dubious related form line. He's just the type to improve a lot from two to three physically. Again, talking about looking at horses physically at two and you know, finding out which you think are liable to progress from two to three. And physically, he looks like he will do. And also, he's a horse who will really appreciate Newbury to me. He's quite big. He's reasonably heavy topped. And he's the kind of horse you might not want to be with at Newmarket. But I think Newbury is a very kind track to horses with that sort of physique. Zoom Zoom, I think, will just be a little bit better than these. He's not the biggest price. There was five to four.
Yeah.
As short as evens in places. Again, it's not really my price to go to get piling in, but I think he's going to take an awful lot of beating. And yeah, I mean, I don't see the draw paying a massive difference. It can do at Newbury. For me, you don't necessarily want to be on either wing. And Newbury, when the ground's on the soft side, it can be difficult to get involved. But he's drawn in stall three, so maybe a little bit lower than ideal. But in a race like this, you wouldn't have thought the draw would play a massive part. And I think he's going to prove hard to beat.
Zoom, zoom for Rory. Francesco De Hickey?
Yeah, I'd agree. Yeah, very progressive in three starts in the space of 5 weeks in October, November. Even when he won on debut at Kempton, he was very strong to finish. The second's rated 85 Imperial Guard, the seven lengths third, eight and a half lengths third, is rated 78 now. He won very well under a penalty at Newmarket. The second, Kikuli, won a Newmarket maiden on Tuesday. The third, won a Doncaster Novice last month on his next start. And he was impressive in St. Cloud when winning on heavy ground over 7 furlongs, fairly comfortable. He's the one to beat. As far as his price, you know, reflective of his chance, I would say, I was looking at the prices there, and Sun's a big price at 33-1 if you're looking for an each way bet in the race. He's only won from six, but he ran credibly last season. He won his maiden here on faster ground. On his second start, he was 10 lengths behind City of Troy when, I think, fifth in the Superlative Stakes. He's beaten just over 2 lengths in the Vintage Stakes at Goodwood. He had the likes of Hatem and Iberian just ahead of him. He was 3 lengths behind Arabian Crown at Salisbury at listed level over mine when third. Arabian Crown bolted up in the Group 3 Zetland Stakes his next start. He finished the season by beating 2.5 lengths in the Group 2 Royal Lodge Stakes at Newmarket. Ghostwriter, Macduff and Capulet were ahead of him. Caviar Heights was last in that race. He ran well when third in the field and on Wednesday at a big price. So, like, you know, you're just looking at him going, his form isn't that bad. He's only priced as one of the rags of the field. And Richard Hannon had Dark 30 win a Newmarket handicap during the week, while the Camden Colt and the Actor were also second at Newmarket. So, yeah, I just thought he's still in the 2,000 guineas. Look, I'm not saying he's going to win, but 33-1 each way. Like Zoom Zoom, the one would be very hard to beat. But yeah, I thought Sun was a big price now as well.
S-O-N, Sun. Julie Wood, massive Spurs fan, I assume. Or Korean fan. Sun, funny name for a horse. 33-1 each way. But Zoom Zoom, the pick from the lads. You've agreed on, I count 5 horses, lads, today. Could have been a little, did you have a little conference beforehand, did you?
Certainly not.
Right.
Let's hope Rory's hot streak continues.
Yeah, exactly. All you had to do is read the Irish Field, Frank, and you would have got all the selections last week, or 2 weeks ago, whatever it was. Right, one more race in Newbury to look at, the Spring Cup, the Mile Straight Handicap. This race kind of moving on from the Lincoln for a few. You got the regulars at this stage of the season, Radabarg and Latam at 10-1 and 9-1 respectively. But your favourite at the moment is Navaggio. For James Horton, here's a who, 8-1. 9-1 Thunderball as well for the Coles. Paul and Oliver Cole have started the season well. 10-1 Dancing Magic for Roger Teal. Look Back Smiling's 10s. And I'm sure, Frank, you'll be giving us an extra place or two in this race. And hopefully you'll be giving us the winner too.
Yeah, I liked Thunderball. I thought he shaped a lot better in the finishing position when he was 7th in the Lincoln. To my eye, he shaped like he needed the run a little bit. He travelled well, just off the pace, came to challenge 2 furlongs out, might just have hit the front and then weakened out from there. I also think he chased too hot a pace. Like if you look at the 6 horses that finished in front, they all came from midfield or further back. So I think he can upgrade that run. He was progressive last year. He won a novice over 7 furlongs at Newbury, which is always a positive. He handles the track. He won a class 2 handicap, a good one of 95. He finished a very good 7th in the Cambridgeshire off 95 as well, winning his small group. I think he was over the far side, wasn't he? Said Paul and Oliver Cole are among the winners, mainly with their juveniles. I'd be keeping a close eye on any 2-year-old newcomers there running. They've had 2 win really well. And I can see him, you know, taking a big step forward from Doncaster. And I think he's pretty solid, you know, each way in a way. It's a very competitive race, but I think he'll take a good step forward from Doncaster.
Thunderball for the Coles. 1965 James Bond movie. All right then, Rory.
I hate to say it.
You've done it again.
I was there were two I quite liked in the race, and I thought that
Thunder and Ball, was it?
Thunderball and Noble Order. Noble Order's actually, I thought Noble Order would be skinny for this, but actually it's a fair price. He's 16-1. So Noble Order would at the prices would be my main selection in the race. But yeah, I everything that Frank said, I completely agree with. We don't tend to look at it very much, but you've got to look at the wind in racing at times. For example, the Craven meeting in Newmarket this week, the horses are running with a bit of a tailwind behind them, and it's helping front runners. Whereas last year's meeting, they were running into a headwind and nothing won from the front at all. All the winners were coming from off the pace, and those who were racing prominently didn't really get home. And that's a big deal at certain race courses. And Doncaster can be one of them. And the Lincoln meeting, it was very difficult for front runners racing into a headwind again. So there are plenty of horses to mark up who shaped well but didn't get home. And Thunderball was one of those. So Frank's made exactly the points I would have made. He's run very well. He's probably best with a bit of give on the ground. He wasn't disgraced in the Cambridgeshire at a big price, 80-1. He was only beaten 2.5 lengths last season. And then he's won on soft ground at Goodwood under today's jockey, Alec Wojcanski, who's worth his £3 claim. And then, yeah, miles better than the fair results in the Lincoln. And I think if he had a 3 to his name from that race and it was turning out here, he wouldn't be a double figure price. I don't think it is a competitive race. But again, I want to be drawn in the middle here. I think that you can get lost. I mean, sometimes it's an advantage to be drawn very high at Newbury, but not more so when the ground is very quick, I think. And occasionally you get jockeys who try to go to the stands rail and take advantage of it, but it doesn't always work out. And they do tend to race up the centre of the course, which helps horses who are able to race get a decent position towards the middle. And both the selection, Thunderball's drawn an 8, which I think is fine. And the main selection, I've not really got onto yet. It's drawn in stall 11, isn't he? Noble Order. Now he's very lightly raced, and he's clearly been hard to train. He was in training with Charlie Appleby, showed loads of ability in maidens. All his form has been on the all weather, virtually all his form has been on the all weather. But he's shown promise on turf. He was second in a novice at Newmarket on debut, and I thought he won with plenty to spare, starting out for Archie Watson at Newcastle off a fairly lengthy break last time out. Always travelling strongly, put up a very good time figure in winning a handicap off a mark of 84. Handicap was putting up £6 for that, but it doesn't look harsh to me. Archie Watson, obviously, as you'd expect, in good form. He tends to have a big string ready to go early. Holly Doyle, as usual, rides. On pedigree, he wants softish ground, being by Jabawi out of a well-related mare called Zibelina. He's bred to be very good. Obviously, as I said, he's had an issue or two over the years, but he won with plenty to spare in Newcastle last time, without Holly Doyle having to go for everything. I don't think the switch to turf is going to be a problem. The slight concern with him is that he can race a bit freely. He did when beating at Kempton the last time he was seen for Charlie Appleby, and he was keen enough at Newcastle. But Newcastle's a stiff track, and he saw it out well. So I don't see him having a massive problem at Newbury as well. And the 16-1, I think, is too big. I think he ends up going off single figures for this.
What? Oh, another one of those bold comments.
Probably not favourite, but I think he is a single figure.
Single figures is a chance of going on favourite.
It's kind of an 8-1 the field race.
Yeah, it is that type of race. So look, couple of shouts, Noble Order and Thunderball. So you've joined at the hip again, lads, for I think the sixth time today. You wonder, will the naps be the same? Before we get to the naps, I wanted to reference, and some it may have passed a few people by, but if you're watching Racing TV on Saturday, you're going to have a great afternoon, because additional to those two meetings we just talked about, the Curragh is going to slide in to racing TV coverage, and there's a cracker of an alleged stakes. We talked about this race a couple of weeks ago, Rory, when it was due to take place. Obviously lost it to the weather. We've got the declarations for it, and I mentioned there was some, it was Joe Logan yourself who were on, a really good looking renewal, Mashore, 110 rated. You've also got Crypto Force, fascinating runner in his return after winning the Beresford one last season, beat some good horses that day. But you threw a horse at me in Maxis, who you thought could win a few races this season. Can you just remind me what you said there a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah, I managed to get her wrong last season. I thought she was enormously impressive in a Goran maiden on debut. You know, she was obviously making quite a belated debut. That was in the middle of June last year. She's won by the best part of five lengths, despite not being particularly well positioned through the race. And Goran's a track where you do want to get track position. And I thought I napped her next time out when she ran a listed race at Nace and she finished last. She did a bit better at the same level next time out of the Cura, finishing 6th of 14, but still looking short of experience. And then she bolted up and a group three at Ferry House on her final stakes, the Denny Cordell Laverack and Lamwade Stud Philly Stakes to give the race its full title. And that was back on softish ground. So the two runs where she was disappointing in the middle were on quick ground, good to firm, good. Her debut effort was on ground, the soft side of dead at Goran, and then it was again good to soft, or yielding if you like, at Ferry House for her final start. So ground with given it, I think, is important to her. And the daughter of Frankel is particularly well-bred, and I think there's a lot more to come from her this season. So although she needs to improve a little bit on the figures, I think she probably will. And you'd probably like to point out who owns her as well.
Damn it. You stole, well, I mean, I said it a couple of weeks ago. So, well, who does he play for was the question.
Real Sociedad, is it?
Very good. Yeah, he plays for Real Sociedad. He was with Real Madrid. When I think originally the horse was in the Joseph O'Brien. I think he went to Goran. I think he was there.
Yes, I think so. Yeah, I remember seeing the story afterwards. Yeah,
footage of him. His name I've already forgotten. I'm not going to click on the horse. Frank, you are
Valor Zalus.
Yes, that's the one. Frank's eyes look dead in the water talking about racing. Like genuinely, he looks. I thought he was frozen on the Zoom first.
I was completely zoned out until I heard Real Sociedad, and I was like, "What was the player? What are you talking about?"
Yeah, the guy who owns the Joseph O'Brien horse, Max Sucks, who's Roy's pick for the alleged stakes, which you've gone through horse to horse, haven't you?
Oh, I had a look at it and I went, oh, geez, I could be making a cup of tea and a slice of toast here when I'm doing this. So.
You're disgraced.
Oh, if I went for the toast and tea.
You're a disgrace. The flat turf season is where it's at, lads. We're going to have a cracker of a summer and I'm looking forward to
it. Can I just give mention to one just, look, it won't be much of a price, I'd imagine, but just that air, the 445 Key to Bourbon. Ran a cracker in the Martin Pipe, goes on novice hurdle. Bill Ricky Dickey is in there as well. He's interesting on a bit of better ground, but yeah, Key to Bourbon. I think Martin Pipe was a good renewal. The right horses came to the fore there, and he was running there of 140. He reassessed 145. He should take all the beating.
Is there a bad renewal ever of the Martin Pipe? Key to Bourbon. Paul obviously rides in the Jiggy colours. Billy Riquet, Dickey, with Patrick on board, as you said. Go on, guess
Billy Riquet.
Yeah, I don't know. Like,
there's an A there. It is Billy Riquet. It's Billy
Riquet. Is it? But there's an A there. There's an A in between.
I know that, but it's pronounced Billy Riquet.
Well, spell it correctly then. Like, if you want me to pronounce it correctly, spell it correctly.
Well, see, well, you could say that C-A-Y should be pronounced Key anyway. In terms of, you know, places.
Billy Riquet Dickey. And if they want to change the spelling with the K instead of the A, that's fine. And then I'll call him Billy Ricky Dickey. But it's Billy Riquet Dickey. I hope you're listening, Donnellys. I'm sure they do.
It's a real place, you know. They didn't name the town of Billy Ricky. Yeah.
Oh, it's a place. All right.
In Essex.
Oh, well then. I mean, Terry.
I won't say famous, but didn't they have like a bit of a project non-league team there that they tried to turn into a league football team?
Billy
Ricky Town.
Yeah, I think it registers with me. And
but well, dude, you do love a bit of reality TV, Frank, I know.
No, it's something to reality TV.
Oh, right.
Or like, you know, they had some, you know, throwing a few bob at lower league, sort of lower level football, trying to get up the leagues. Yeah, I don't know why it registers with me.
Definitely was an episode of Dream Team, no?
Definitely not, no.
But no. I do miss Dream Team. What a great show. Some cracking storylines on that. Okay, so just watch out for Key to Bourbon in that 455. Odds on, Frank? 445. Odds on, what do you think? I'm just looking great.
I know
Gordon's got one in it and Paul Nichols got, yeah, no, maybe you might get a prize.
It's not a bad little race, but he probably, like, it just depends on what the vibes are with Billericky Dickey. Do you know what I mean? How much the market he's going to take. If he's half fancied as well, maybe you might, but if he's not,
it's good bit clear on ratings.
Gordon will be, he'll be on Sonia.
Good bit clear on ratings. Right, that is all the racing we want to talk about now. I need your best bets on Saturday. There's a good chance you're going to agree on the nap, and that's okay. You don't have to go head to head, lads. We don't mind. Like, sometimes people like to do the nap double. So, best bet on Saturday, Rory De Laurier, please.
I'm going to go for the big race again and tip up Inishir in the Scottish Grand National.
Lovely. Inishir, Scottish Grand National, which is due off at 3:35 on Saturday afternoon at Ayr Racecourse. Frank Hickey.
Oh, I was actually going to do the same thing. Oh, it's like basically we just did one set of notes and just copied it completely for the show when we're busting out. Look, I go Inishir, but look, if you want a different one, Bialystock. As I said, I probably would have napped him if he was a double figure price. He is corrected, but yeah. Look, if you want something different, I'll say Bialystock. But yeah, I'd be very keen on Inishir in the Scottish National as well.
You're struggling with that name. Bialystock, indeed.
They'll be calling it Inishir on the day anyway, so you might as well get used to it.
Well, it's Inishir is the name of the bloody island. Go to it. It's lovely if you get the chance off the West Coast. I'm going to say goodbye. I'm going to ask for weekend plans, but I'm also going to say I was listening to Nick Luck Daily there a couple of days ago, and at the end of the show, do you listen to it, Frank?
No, I don't really, but I seem to gather you tend to.
Yeah, I tend to.
The odd times, yeah.
Yeah, the odd time. Look, it's great for when you drive. Our mic commute's about 45 minutes.
I don't commute every day. So.
Yeah, so, but at the end of the show, Nick Luck, Lord Snooty himself, Rory De Laurier was on to me asking me about an incident that happened at Fast Lass. I'm like, what? You have the hotline now, do you, Rory? And he goes on an entire story.
No. I just tweeted. So I've got very annoyed in the past about a rule the BHA have that they think is a great rule. And I think it's a terrible rule. And it will shortly be changed because the stewards at Fast Lass allowed a horse that had been declared to wear blinkers and cheek pieces to wear blinkers and a tongue tie instead. And a horse needs a tongue tie, a horse of Peter Bowen's. But obviously they declared the wrong headgear. And there's a rule that allows trainers to change the headgear a horse wears at the weigh-out as long as they've got permission. Well, the stewards will always give permission if they ask. And they swap the headgear. You're not allowed to swap anything for a tongue tie, though. So the stewards give permission and they shouldn't give permission. And if the connections of the runner-up appeal, that horse will be disqualified. And years ago, I told the BHA about this and said, this is a disaster waiting to happen. And they said, please shut up and leave us alone. And now it's going to bite them in the arse, quite frankly.
Do that, Rory. I find that hard to believe now that they think they know.
Well, they were quite polite in the first place. And then I kept badgering them with it. And they said, listen, enough of that now.
Well, how many years ago did you raise it?
2016.
Yeah, they'll come back and say, sure, look, it's only once
First of all, you can't, we've got 48-hour decks now. So if you ask, and I understand what happens, you have to tick a box on the declaration sheet. And trainers occasionally mean to tick one box and they tick the wrong one by mistake. So this horse, they've ticked cheek pieces instead of a tongue tie, whoever is responsible for the declaration there. And obviously they wanted to change that. But you've got a day before the newspapers are printed when you can change that so everybody knows what headgear the horse is carrying. And having a rule allowing that change to be made 5 minutes from the start of the race is absolutely crazy, particularly when the stewards then make the wrong decision and allow a horse to carry headgear, which is not allowed to carry, which will lead to his disqualification eventually.
This episode.
Yeah, when I moaned about this, it was about... when I had my first rant about this, it was about a horse who had been declared in the correct headgear, but the trainer didn't bring that headgear with him to the race course or his traveling headlad or whatever. And they swapped it for headgear that was completely inappropriate and the horse ran badly. But the stewards still believed the story that the headgear had been declared in error and changed it. And I said, that's completely out of order. And they said, no, it's not. It's absolutely fine. No one's affected by this. And I said, I think you'll find they are, but no. I think Nick Luck will probably bring that up again because I spoke to Lydia Islop about it this morning, and she said me and Nick looked at this and we thought that the stewards were right, but they've now admitted they were wrong. So I think that means it'll pop up again with an explanation.
I mean, two appearances on Nick Luck Daily for Rory DeLargy in a week.
Isn't it?
Oh my God. I tell you what. The main story is that you've got the hotline straight through and you can determine the editorial stance of the NLD. That's the main story, essentially.
I didn't hear anything from Nick.
Lydia Hislop said she agrees with you, but also like, it's fine. And I was like, poor Rory.
right. Be fair, you're a brave man taking on Rory when it comes to rules or facts and history, aren't you?
Yeah, all right. Okay, we've got naps. We've got a lovely look ahead to a weekend of racing. I know we've got way over time. Sorry, but I do have to ask, what are your weekend plans, Frank?
I'm off on Saturday.
Excellent.
Don't have a whole pile of plans. Try and go to the gymnasium, trying to get less obese. And I'm working Sunday.
Good plan, working on Sunday. It's not a great day to race on Sunday, is it? I don't think so. Bad Sunday to pick. Frank. Rory?
I'm much the same as Frank, actually. Also trying to be slightly less obese and largely feeling miserably. But I have discovered that I can play paddle now. In Alton. Not Alton Towers, by the way, the nearest town to me. So I'm off to play paddle on Saturday morning at 9:30 for an hour and a half.
Great
which fun. Is a tremendous sport. Tremendous.
Yeah, great fun. Yeah, I know a lot of people talk about it. It is great fun. I was just going to... Juice Mark stole my line. You're not only giving us the same selections, you're doing the same things on the weekend. You are joined at the hip, it would appear.
Is your wife giving out to you a lot recently, Rory?
It's funny you should say that, Frank. Yeah.
Yeah, he's playing paddle with non-family members, I imagine. Mm-hmm. Well, look, enjoy your respective weekends. What am I doing? I'm going for a little stay away. I'm going to a place called Lyrith Estate. Doing a bit of falconry this weekend, lads.
Just far from falconry you were raised.
Well, I mean, after my jibe at the Mir guitar, I thought I better pick up some of those kind of skills that they like to use.
Yeah, they like a bit of falconry.
So, I'd say like a little bit of falconry. I might buy a horse as well the next week or something like that, but or about 500. But yeah,
I need to get one of these lucrative jobs down in broadcasting.
There was one that went up on the website, Frank Hickey, and I didn't see your application come through. So
it was probably thrown in the bin as soon as it did.
Lads, look, enjoy your respective fitness sort of Saturdays. And paddle is fit-ish, I think it's fair to say. Enjoy the gym. Hopefully a few of those selections win. As I said, Ruby will be back next week. We'll be very much talking about that UK trainer's title. Ruby giving us the edge on the Willie Mullins horses, of which there'll be plenty, I'd imagine. And maybe El Fabiolo going to Sandown instead of Punchdown. Have a great weekend, all. We'll be back next Thursday. And then, of course, it's Punchdown, where we hope to have daily podcasts, which means a busy week for us. Have a great weekend, folks. Talk to you next week.